All right, Shabbos, say good morning, good morning. Let us begin. A good chodesh, everyone, and what an incredible schos Baruch Hashem for us to begin this beautiful new month with beautiful new Gemara. So we'll say, so we thank our sponsors, our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Nisan, Sa'id and Simehagin, to show the Hakaras HaTov to Hashem for all of his Nisim and Niflaos. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeem all of the hostages, bring complete Hatzlacha to our precious soldiers, to all of Am Yisrael and the Eretz Yisrael. But so with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Ayin 70, and we are picking up Emirat Hashem on Samech Tesma Beis 69b at the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows, Shamin Parah V'chamer V'chal Davar Shu Ose V'Ochel Amechza. So we'll say, so remember again, still continuing in our same topic, which is the topic of Iska. So remember again, just reorient ourselves a little bit. So Halacha L'Maisa, Salacha L'Maisa, we have a situation where Reuven and Shimon go into business. So remember again, Reuven's providing the capital, Shimon's going ahead and is providing the labor. So remember that we were introduced to the concept that Halacha L'Maisa, we run into a potential ribbis issue, because since they're splitting everything 50-50, so it could be viewed that because Shimon is getting the quote-unquote loan from Reuven, therefore he's managing Reuven's 50% of the capital. So that looks like ribbis. Again, not ribbis d'oraisa, but mechzik ribbis, has the appearance of ribbis. So we've established a very simple approach, which is that Reuven is obligated to pay Shimon a management fee. And therefore, once he's receiving a management fee, a salary, therefore he's receiving separate remuneration for managing Shimon's investment capital. Okay, now what the Mishnah says, by the way, is that if it happens to be that the partnership is centered around an animal, and the animal itself does work, so the fact that Shimon can now use that animal for work, that could come in lieu of a management fee. That's all. So that's how Shimon receives his salary, so to speak, by utilizing the partnership animal for his own private interests, for his own private uses as well. So in a place where they have the custom to divide up the offspring, so let's say again, the investment capital, let's say the partnership capital is an animal. The animal has offspring. So in a place where the custom is to divide up the offspring immediately, we divide up the offspring. In a place where it's customary for Shimon to raise the offspring, so they'll raise the offspring. So again, what that's pointing out over here is, remember we spoke about this yesterday a little bit, that if the partnership is in livestock, and then the livestock reproduces, right, the livestock has vlados, so that again, that's the profit of the partnership. That's the profit of the partnership. So remember again, we already discussed yesterday, how long is Shimon obligated to go ahead and care for the offspring before he himself has the right to order a division. So that's the Mishnah saying over here. There were sometimes the custom was that they would just automatically reinvest the profits of the partnership into the partnership. Other times, halacha l'maisa, you could go ahead and order a division. Okay, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shamin Egel im Imo, Usiyach im Imo. So we'll say we actually saw this. A lot of this we actually quoted yesterday as well. That remember again for young animals. If the partnership was about young animals, remember again, there was an additional what we called tircha surcharge, right? That you had, Reuven had to pay Shimon extra for having to care for young animals. That is, so remember again, halacha l'maisa, in a situation where it was the young together with its mother, since the young followed its mother, therefore this additional tircha surcharge was. Is Menachem looking for his gemara? There are two. I don't know what's over there, but there's two on that table, right over there, right behind Daniel. So the Gemara says as follows: Umafriz al sadeu ve'nachoshish mishum ribis. But at the end of the day, mafriz al sadeu means. So actually, we're going to see in the Gemara what this means. You could increase the rent of the field, right? And there's no concern of ribis. Okay, so I'll say so. A lot thrown into that Mishnah. Let's see the Gemara. Tan Rabbanan. So we'll say, what's the case over here when we talk about this idea that you can increase the rent on the field and you don't have to be choshesh because of ribbis? What is that case? So Ketzad, here we go. It's actually a very interesting case. So we'll say a relatively simple, straightforward case. I go ahead and I rent a field to Reuven. And the way it works is I'm renting the field for, this is like more like a sharecrop. It's not sharecropping, but the rental fee is not money. Rather, the rental fee is produce. So right, Reuven, I'm hereby leasing or renting this field to you. And again, you owe me 10 kor. That's the amount of payment. Okay, the shana, for every year. Fine. Va'omer lo, teili masayim zoz, va'afar asena, va'ani ela l'cha shnei masar kor l'shana moter. Now watch this. So Reuven says to me, listen, do me a favor. Why don't you give me 200 zoz? And in return for 200 zoz, I will go ahead and pay you 12 kor. 12 kor. Now, both say, now, so understand what's happening over here, right? So I'm leasing the field to Reuven. Lease payment, 10 kor a year. Reuven says, make me a loan of 200 zoz. And obviously, Reuven's going to pay me back 200 zoz. And he also agrees to increase to 12 kor a year. So the Gemara says, this is not interest. Really? Because it sounds a lot like interest. In other words, Reuven is agreeing to pay me back principal plus an additional 2 kor. It's not interest. Why is it not interest? Because what does Reuven plan ultimately again on doing with the 200 zuz? He plans on utilizing it for field improvements. So because he's utilizing it ultimately again for field improvements, therefore again this is not considered to be interest. Rather, it's considered to be I'm investing more money into the improvement of the field. Very interesting halacha. If you take a look, yeah, Rashi says over here, mutter. Rashi says mutter. Ve'in zeribis, ve'in zuribis, scharamos, ela, shechocha mimeno sada meshubachas, uma'ale lo bechachirus sada tovi, yosim sada rama, saimzos. Shabbos says, so because ultimately Reuven says that his intention with the loan is to go ahead. In other words, Reuven wants to improve the field. So he's asking for investment capital to improve the field. So therefore, this is not ribis. Since we could explain that the addition, that the money's being given, it's true, it's a loan, but it's a loan being utilized for the improvement of the field. And the benefit of the improvement of the field is the greater output. Therefore, no ribis. Very interesting. But this only works by a field. Why does it only work by a field? Because by a field, the field is something where you could actively invest in and improve the output of it. So that's why Ginebo said, remember again, in order for this not to be ribis, the 200 zuz has to be viewed as an investment in the actual object. So that only works by real estate, the Gemara suggests, because by real estate, you could invest in it and actually make it better. But it wouldn't work, let's say, if I had leased a boat or I leased a store to Reuven. Amrav Nachman, Amrav Ravua, Pan Mishamaf Rezachonos. That's not necessarily true. Sometimes you could use this same framework even by a store. For example, Lotzer Batsura. Let's say again, I leased Reuven a store, right? And the store, the lease payment is $10,000 a year. And Reuven says, do me a favor, lend me another $1,000 and I'll give you back an additional $1,000. So the Gemara says, it could work how? Now, in real estate, it works because you're improving the property. It can't work in a chonos. Then the Gemara says, it could work in a chonos. How could it work in a chonos? Let's say Reuven says, you know what? I'm going to paint the walls and make it look even more beautiful. Now, obviously, a store with nice painted walls, you could rent out for more money. So therefore, since there could be greater rental revenue, therefore that's considered to be an investment in the store. Svina, lasos bo iskaria. Similarly, again, if Reuven says, Reuven's leasing a ship from me, there's a certain lease amount, he asks me for a loan, and in return for the loan, he's going to give me more lease money. That could work out if he's repairing the mast of the ship. So what the Gemara is just pointing out is, as long as the loan is being viewed as monies to be invested in the leased item, we could go ahead and avoid a ribis scenario. Okay. So the Gemara says, Chanos Latzur Batsurasa, Ditzabu Ba'inshi, Bahava Agritve. So in a store, because again, if the store has nice painted walls, then Lamaisa, I could lease it out subsequently for more money. Svina, Lasas Voiskaria, something again with the ship, if the mast is improved. Kevin de Shapira Iskario Tfe Agra Tfe. Okay. So the Mogos write this Sinta Amarav Agra Upagra. Supposing now interest now that we started talking about boats, so the Gemara transitions to a different discussion regarding boats. When it comes to boats, there are two pockets of payments. There's Agra and Pagra. So we'll say what's Agra and Pagra. Look at Rashi, third wide line down. Sina, Sinta, Amrav, Agra Upagra. Most mutra lahaskira amnashim tishaber yishalim osa socha. So I will say, when you rent out a boat, it was common to have two fees. Number one, a rental fee. Number two, a damage fee. the damage fee. So again, Rebbe was saying, now the chap over here is, one would have thought that when you pay a rental fee, the chap of a rental fee is that it includes everything. And therefore, it sounds like over here that maybe, you know, charging an additional fee, like a damage fee, sounds a little bit like ribbis. Kamashlon, the Gemara says no. The Rav says it was common. It was common that you had two different fees, a rental fee, and in the event of damage, a damage fee. I'm going to have Kamar Rav ask the Rav, I agra lo pagra, I pagra lo agra. No, they said to Rav, not true. You got to choose one fee. You can't start charging a rental fee and a damage fee. See, either decide. Charge a rental fee or charge a damage fee. But you can't choose both because to do so would certainly sound like a ribbis scenario. Shosak Rav, so I'll say Rav was quiet. So Rav didn't know what to do with this. He wasn't sure how to respond. I'm Rav Sheshes, my time is Shosak Rav. So why was Rav quiet? Lo shama lehad desayin, did he not hear? That's which we learned. Afapi shomer imakablin son barzlami Yisrael, ava makablin son barzlami hanachrim. So this is actually the next Mishnah. So we're going to learn son barzel. Son barzel is property that you receive where you have to guarantee the value of that property even if it diminishes. We learned about son barzel in the context of ksuva. Of ksuva, right? The woman brings, we'll explain more in the next mission. Fine. Woman brings in property to a marriage. So there's two different types of property. There's nichsimalug, where the husband has the right to use the property. And if the value of the property diminishes, that's on the woman. Nichsay son barzel is property that she brings in. It's valuated at the time she comes into the marriage. And husband agrees to guarantee that value. So upon death or divorce, he's on the hook for the original principal value of that property. So the Gemara says, in general, one Jew can't accept tzon barzel property from another Jew. Why? Because that's going to be ribbis. Because Lamayin said that I'm obligated to pay rental or lease payments, plus secure the initial value of the property. So again, that's literally our next Mishnah. So you can't do that from Jews, but you can do that from Gentiles. Aval Amru, but they said, Hashem par lechavero, that I will say, if I go into, right, Reuven and Shimon go into partnership together, and their partnership capital is a cow, and they evaluate the cow. Va'amar lo hare parascha asuyalai b'shloshin dinar. And what happens? So they agree, or for that matter, it could be a rental as well. And they assess that the value of the cow is 30 dinar. Va'ani ale lecha sela b'chodesh, and I'll give you a sela every month. Mutar. Ultimately, again, that is permitted. Why? Because they have not made it into a fight. In other words, they haven't made it about value. They've just made it a rental. The Gemara says, No. What it means is the value didn't really become meaningful unless, of course, the animal dies. Therefore, Papa says, based on this taloch, is Sfina Agra Upagra. Right? We say, buy a boat. You could charge agra and pagra. So we'll say buy a boat, ultimately, again, you're allowed to charge rental and damage, and the additional fee is not considered to be ribbis. And we'll say, by the way, this is also important because as we're going to see, a lot of this ultimately is based really on what is considered to be a standard, right? Just societally normal. So the Gemara says, top of ayin, 70a, v'nagu b'nei kufra, agra b'shas mashicha, upagra b'shas shvira. And we'll say, was the custom of the shipmen, the boatmen, Rashi says, Bali Sina, B'nei Kofra means people who, boating people, they will say, rental fee, you would pay kind of at the time that you took possession of the item, and damages, of course, would be paid, B'shashir, at the time of damages. And I was about to say, to be clear, you weren't automatically, in other words, there wasn't like an objective damage fee. Damages was just the additional amount of money that you would pay in the event that there were damages. So rental you would pay at the time you took possession of the item. Damages you would pay actually when they occurred. To which the Gemara says, "Atu b'min hagatali milsa." I don't understand. Is this dependent on minug? Well, as we'll say, ribis is ribis. So why is this dependent on minug? Mishum demas nisa tanya min haga. Because we'll say, since our Mishnah mentioned minug, therefore the Gemara is talking about the minug. Okay. So we'll say, so therefore, I just want to point out over here, so interestingly enough, what you begin to see is you can have the emergence of these additional fees as long as they're understood from the beginning and they're kind of like minug amakom. So in this case over here, the Gemara points out agra and pagra, rental fee and damages were common, well, at least when it came to the rental of boats. All right. Amar Rav Anan Amar Shmuel. Ma'os, was a very interesting halacha over here. Ma'os shall yisomim mutar lahavosam beribis. That's pretty wild. We'll say, so orphans' money. So remember again, whenever we're speaking about yisomim, we're speaking about kitanim. They're young, they're minors. So therefore, again, that means someone, normally an apotropos, is managing their estate, managing their money. Now comes along Rav Hanina, said in the name of Shmuel, you are allowed to lend the money of yisomim with interest. Wow. Amrli Rav Nachman Mishum Diyasmininu Sfina Luhu Asira. I don't understand, because they're children, you could feed them prohibition, you could feed them something. Asr Nahu Zabo said. So the Gemara is saying over here, Rav Nachman is saying, so ribbis is ribbis. Ribbis is ribbis. How are you allowed to go ahead and lend the money of Yisomim with ribbis? That means the Yisomim are going to be sustained and supported through ill-gotten gains. How are you allowed to do that? Yasmi da achli delav dido leiz lo baso shavkayu. Yisomim will go ahead and consume that which is not their own, i.e. live off of ribbis, should follow those who have left them. Which also is a very strong wording, which means we're going to see that the punishment for ribbis is quite severe. So Rav Nachman said, if Yisomim are going to go ahead and live off ribbis, then they should follow the deceased parent. So obviously, again, a little bit of hyperbole, but trying to make a point over here. Amar le, emalo izi gufa de ovde hechiyala. Says, okay, you know what? Why don't you tell me exactly what happened? In other words, explain to me, when you say that Yisomim could be sustained through ribbis, what are you referring to? Amar le, ha'hu duda dibnei mar okva. So what's this? Listen to this. So the Gemara tells the story. Rashi says, "Dal duda kalachas." So Rabbi said there was a cauldron, so like a large pot, a cauldron. Tivnei Mar Okva. That ultimately, again, the children of Mar Okva. Rashi pointed out Mar Okva died, and he left behind Yisomim. So the Yisomim had this cauldron. Dahava Bei Mar Shmuel, that was in the house of Mar Shmuel. Takel v'yoyevle, takel v'shakele. So ultimately, again, they would weigh it. Because remember, again, they would weigh the cauldron and then go ahead and rent it out. And then ultimately, again, v'shakele, and then when they would receive it back, they would also go ahead and weigh it again. Rashi says over here, takel v'yoyevle, takel v'shakele, hayamaskir la'achirin, v'shakele, kishu mosra lahem, v'chozer u'makabla b'mishkal, imchasar, nechushta, m'shamalo d'mei chasrona, v'yoyevle d'mei agar. So we'll say, watch what would happen. So the Yisomim of Mar Okva had this cauldron. What they would do is, before they would rent it out, they would weigh it. When they got it back, they would weigh it. Now, obviously, every time you use the cauldron, what's happening? Some of the copper is diminished. So they would charge, there would be two fees. One would be a general rental fee, and one would be a depreciation, or a diminution fee. They both say, that's ribbis. That's ribbis, because in general, what you begin to see is halacha kind of assumes that rental fees in general, you generally like incorporate all of these things. That's why we saw by the boats also, the Gemara was surprised that there was a damage fee, because we assumed that rentals take into account all of these things. Yet you see by the Yisomim that they were charging a rental fee and a diminution fee. So the Gemara says, v'shakela shakel agra v'shakel pachsa. So I must say, so you see that the Yisomim, they were taking a rental, and they were also taking depreciation or diminution. Rabbi said, that's ribbis. So this was the case where you see that the Yisomim are allowed to go ahead and take ribbis. So Bosei, by the way, I also want to point out, when the Gemara talks about the idea that the Yisomim are allowed to take ribbis, this is ribbis drabanan, right? Remember again, we're talking about rabbinic ribbis over here, not the oraisa ribbis. Because remember, the oraisa ribbis is really only on a loan, not on rentals. Anytime you're dealing with ribbis on rentals, that's avak ribbis. We're suggesting over here that the rabbinic prohibitions of ribbis do not apply to orphans. One of the many enactments in order to safeguard the money of orphans. I agra lo pachsa, vi pachsa lo agra. Mar says, well, that's not really right. Either charge a rental fee or charge depreciation, but not both. Amar le, ki ha afilo bediknani nami sharlim avad. So he responded, the truth is, this type of setup is permitted even by adults. Mar as well said, this idea of charging a double fee, one for rental, one for depreciation, the truth is, should be permitted by everyone. Why? It's different, because apparently by copper, the more the copper is exposed to the fire, the more the copper itself is diminished. This was an understanding that by copper pots, there was this additional wear and tear. So apparently it would have been common to go ahead and charge a rental fee, plus an actual wear and tear fee. All right. Moshe Yisomim, Mutter the Halvosan, Karov the Schavarako the Hefsit. So Rabbi say, okay, so this is very interesting. So Rabbi say, along this same theme, that it is permitted to go ahead and lend out the money of Yisomim with some type of ribbis. Rabbi say, so again, I want to point out over here, all of these cases where we're saying that it's Mutter to loan out the money of Yisomim with ribbis, it is not ribbis d'oraisa, or quote unquote, only ribbis d'rabanan. And the rabbis are choosing to go ahead and essentially lift their prohibitions in a case of Yisomim, in a case of orphans. What's the case, Rabbi Osei? So watch this, it's actually very interesting. We'll see this as well. That when it comes to lending of the money of orphans, you can lend it what we call karov l'schar v'rochok l'hefsid. So what does that mean? Karov l'schar v'rochok l'hefsid. Essentially what it means is as follows. You lend it in a way where halach l'maisa, the borrower assumes all of the loss. That's what it means. Karov l'schar, that means the Yisomim are only going to benefit, and they're not going to lose. Now, normally, that's ribbis. Normally, you can't lend money that way, because I will say again, if I lend money to the borrower, and the borrower assumes, or I lend an object, and the borrower assumes all of the loss, and we split all of the profits, that is mechzik ribbis, right? That has a ribbis appearance. So normally, again, you and I do that. We're not allowed to do that. Yisomim are allowed to do that. Karol, this is what we call karol v'schar, the rachok lehefsid. That ultimately, again, is permitted. Tan Rabbanon, this is actually a beautiful gemara. Karol v'schar rachok lehefsid rasha. It will say if somebody lends money and they lend money karol v'schar rachok lehefsid, which means the other party assumes all of the loss, and ultimately, again, and we share the profits. That's a rasha. Now the reason why that's a rasha is because at least midrabanan that is going to be a ribbis scenario. Okay, karov lehefsed v'rachok l'schar. If you lend money in a way where you, the lender, assume all of the responsibility, all of the loss, and you share the profits, chassid, that's piety. Karov lezeh ulezeh, rachok mizeh, zoi midas kaladam. So I'll say, if you lend essentially in a perfect profit sharing agreement, That's the normal derech. So it's very interesting. I will point out how fascinating it is to see over here that there is this midos chasidos by lending money, right? And this midos chasidos by lending money is assuming the lender assumes all of the risk, right? And they share in the benefit. And obviously, again, where would that come up as a midos chasidos? That would come up in a midos chasidos we're going to discuss. We'll see this idea that sometimes there is an element of tzedakah where if you could loan someone money instead of giving it to them outright. So loaning someone money allows someone sometimes to maintain their dignity, that they don't feel that they're receiving a handout, rather they feel that they're receiving a loan. But again, if you structure the loan in such a way where I, the lender, essentially take on all of the responsibility for the loan, right? So again, in that way, I'm providing the chesed, but at the same time, doing it in a way which preserves the dignity of the recipient. That's called the midas chasidos. Okay, so I will say, so bottom line, I just want to point out, just that part to remember over here is that when we talk about this idea that you can lend money of the Yisomim with ribbis, what it means is this transaction of what we call karov l'schar v'rachok mehefsid. We're essentially, I, the lender, which was the Yisomim, they have no risk, but all the gain. No risk, but all the potential gain. Or have the ability to fully share in the gain. That is permitted by Yisomim. All right, Amar li Rabba the Rav Yosef. Hani zuzi diyasmi hechi adina lehu. So Rabba says, Rav Yosef, how should we best manage the money of Yisomim? But Rav Yosef, this is part of this overarching principle, which is rabbinic interest, rabbinic ribbis, does not apply to money management of orphans. That is the takeaway over here. So now the Gemara says, so how should we best manage the money of Yisomim? Amarlei, mosvina lehu beidina. So watch this. We take it to Beis Din. Viavina lehu zuza. So this is interesting. And essentially, what do? We have Beis Din administer a trust. And Beis Din essentially gives out the money as they need it. So it says, as opposed to giving the Yisomim a lump sum, we're concerned that they're going to spend everything. So instead, we give them, they put the money in a Beis Din trust, and Beis Din gives them the money as they need it. Amalei, v'haka kalya karna. Here's the problem. They're going to totally draw down the principal. In other words, I will say, all there is principal over here, and if you're just giving them a zuz, one zuz at a time, sooner than later, they're just going to totally burn through the entire account. So also, it's obvious what the Gemara is suggesting over here is there needs to be an investment mechanism somehow for this money. Amrale mar hechi of it. So what would you suggest? Amrale bat kinan gavad de islay dava pricha. Listen to this. We find the guy who has gold. Now we'll say, not any gold, right? So just find the guy with gold. Now, dava pricha means like gold pieces. Not gold bars, but like gold fragments. You'll see why in just a moment. Vinaktin. So we'll say, so actually, let's take a look at it now. Why dava pricha? Why gold pieces? Rashi says over here, dava pricha, pricha, grutos shel zav, tevade shelohen, ve'inon pikadon dolo avidi inchi demifkidi dava pricha bepikadon. V'cheven da asheru, v'yishal likbos bimenu, im yov dumosa. So we'll say, essentially what we're saying is like this. We want to give over the money of the Yisroel to someone who's going to manage it, but we need to give it to someone who's independently wealthy, who can go ahead and guarantee the money should there be a loss. Should there be a loss? How do you know a rich guy? So I'm going to say, so listen to this. A rich guy is someone who has gold pieces, not gold bars. Why not gold bars? Because with a gold bar, it's possible that who does that gold bar belong to? Someone else who deposited would come with Reuven. So Reuven's watched. Just because Reuven has a gold bar doesn't mean it's his. Could be that he's watching it for Shimon or for someone else. Gold pieces, like just pieces of gold, smaller pieces of gold, is not something that people customarily deposited with each other. So if you have gold pieces, who does that belong to? That's yours. So if you're a gold piece guy, that means, you're good, right? You've made it in life. So we find the guy who's got gold pieces, which means he's independently wealthy. Because he's independently wealthy, we're going to have him manage the money of the Yisomim, but we're going to tell him, by the way, you're liable. You're personally responsible for it. But he's good for it because he's got good gold pieces. V'naktinon davamine, we take gold from him. V'yavin lohu nehele karov l'schava rachok lehefsid. So we'll say, so what do we do? It's a very simple transaction. We find this guy's independently wealthy. We take collateral, gold pieces from him for the money of the Yisomim. We lend him the money of the Yisomim. And essentially now we tell him, go out and do business with this. But the terms of the loan are karov l'schar v'rachok lehefsid, which means he bears full responsibility for any losses of the loan. And all profits could either be split 50-50 or some other term that is favorable to the Yisomim. So we'll say, so remember again, once again, Karov L'Schar, Rachok L'Hafsid, this is normally rabbinic ribbis, but it's permitted when it comes to the Yisomim. Fascinating. Aval, Davar Mesuyum Lo, but we'll say, but if the guy just has what we call like a defined, and that's he has gold bars, we're not going to trust him with this. Why? Dilma Pikadon Hu Ninhu. Because we'll say, maybe it's not really his. In other words, we need to know that he is independently wealthy and that the wealth that he has does not belong to someone else. Va'asumare Yav Sima V'Shakele. Amar Rav Ashi. So we'll say, so therefore, again, we're concerned that if it's a Pikadon, the owner of the Pikadon is going to come, and therefore there's nothing to secure the debt. In other words, we'll say, so essentially, what we do is we find the guy who's wealthy, but you need to ascertain that he's wealthy. How do you know that he's wealthy? So we'll say, so again, in general, one of the difficult parts of ascertaining wealth is that a person could easily have all of the trappings of life that make him look wealthy, but he's not wealthy. So the Gemara says, we're concerned. So a guy could have the house, a guy could have the car, a guy could have all of this stuff. Okay, he could be in debt, you know, up to his eyeballs. So what do you need? You need gold pieces. Because gold pieces, the only way you have that in your possession is if they're yours. Gold bar may belong to someone else. Gold pieces are absolutely yours. So you have gold pieces. We take those gold pieces as collateral for the loan from the Yisomim. So now the Yisomim have those gold pieces, so therefore their money is secure. We lend them money with terms favorable to the Yisomim. Karov L'Schar, profit-sharing agreement, but you, Reuven, you bear all the loss. And this is how you invest the money of the Yisomim. Incredible. This works fantastic. Assuming that what? You find a guy with gold pieces. Fantastic. However, the Gemara says, so we'll say, what happens if you can't find a guy like that? Right? Or you can find the guy, but he doesn't want to do it. What do you do then? So the Gemara says, should the Yisomim lose out? Amar Ravashi, listen to this. This is incredible. Chazinan gavra demashfu nechase. So also rather, again, we find the guy who has property. And again, in general, his assets are uncontested. So that's what we do. We find a guy with uncontested assets, or mehemen, and a guy who's trustworthy, v'shama dina daraisa, and ultimately, again, he listens to halacha, v'lo mekabel shamta dirabanon, and he's not excommunicated. That's always good. Right? In other words, he's not under any kind of rabbinic ban. So we'll say, so essentially what the Gemara says is, if you can't find a guy who's wealthy, then at least find a guy who's comfortable. He's comfortable, right? And Lamaisa, he's a good, upstanding individual. He's not under any bans or excommunications or chayrims like that. He abides by halacha, fi'avina lehu nehele b'beidina. And ultimately, again, we lend him the money under the same terms in Beis Din. So ultimately, again, the terms are going to be the same. So halacha lemaisa, same thing, right? So same thing, halacha lemaisa, we go out and we give him everything, karov l'schar, and rachok mehafsid. Incredible. Right, Rabbi Osei, shkoyach, mishnah, amud beis. We're moving today. So the Gemara says as follows. I'm doing tshuva. I'm turning over a new leaf. The Gemara says as follows. Oh, not really, but just it's a shorter daf today. So this is what I was banking on for the last little while. Good. And we'll say, and also, by the way, I just want to point out the beauty of this daf. We've actually seen everything on today's daf. We've seen already. In other words, it's already been referenced beforehand. Says the Mishnah, in Mekabin Son Barzal. Like I told you, we literally just saw this. You know, so we'll say, in Mekabin Son Barzal in Israel, Bipnei Shu Ribis. Okay, so we'll say, so take a look at Rashi just a moment. In Mekabin Son Barzal, Rashi says over here, Kalach Rais HaNechosim Ala Mekabel, V'sham Osam Alav B'maos, watch this. Ruvain gives to Shimon. Ruvain gives to Shimon, ultimately again an animal, right? And Shimon is paying a rental, right? Plus or an investment amount, but Shimon agrees to go ahead and guarantee the value of the object. So the problem with this is, since Shimon is on the hook for whatever rental amount, lease amount, or profit sharing amount, plus guaranteeing the original value of the animal, it's ribbis. So what I say essentially, what you begin to see is, anytime you have a rental, lease amount, profit sharing, plus, that plus is always going to be ribbis. So the idea over here that Shimon's on the hook for the value of the animal, should it depreciate or be diminished in some way, that's called ribbis. So look at that Rashi once more. So essentially, Shimon, who is the makabel, he's the one who's receiving the animal, he has complete responsibility for the value of the animal. The animal was valuated. Now, ultimately, again, you can have a profit sharing agreement. So therefore, again, they're sharing all of the profits. So what's we have to do the rest? So in Mekabin Son Barzal in Israel. So therefore, you cannot enter into this Son Barzal agreement with a Jew. Now we're being introduced to something new. Aval Mekabin Son Barzal min ha'akum. Here we go. We have never seen this before explicitly, but we knew it was coming. We'll say ribbis only applies between Jews. Ribbis does not apply between Jews and non-Jews. Therefore, again, if Shimon wants to go into business, not with Reuven, but rather again with Bob, right? Bob the Gentile, and ultimately, again, they want to do a Son Barzal agreement, that's totally fine. So the Gemara says, "Beloved mehen umalvin osam ribbis." And we'll say in general, the halacha is, you could lend a non-Jew with ribbis, you could borrow from a non-Jew with ribbis, the laws of ribbis, again, we'll say it makes sense, the laws of ribbis is a din in the Torah, and it only applies between Jews. Dechein beger toshav, and so to we'll say a ger toshav, remember again, a ger toshav is also a non-Jew, but a ger toshav ultimately, again, is someone who goes ahead and dwells within Eretz Yisrael, and accepts, essentially, the seven Noahide laws, gives up avodah zarah and everything else. So the Gemara says, "V'chein ger toshav, mal v'yisrama oso shal akum, midas akum." Soon again, I will say, a Jew could lend out the money of a non-Jew. And I will say, so he could be essentially the bank, right? He could be the broker to go ahead and lend out non-Jewish money and lend it to other Jews with interest. Aval lo midas Yisrael. But this can't be done ultimately, again, midas Yisrael, with the knowledge of a Jew. Now we'll have to see exactly what that means. So we'll say, here we go, says the Gemara. So the first thing the Mishnah taught me is this Son Barzal agreement, right? So again, Reuven gives Shimon the animal, and let's say again, there's either a rental, a lease, or a profit-sharing agreement, but Shimon is on the hook for the full value of the animal. So the value is locked in, he's fully responsible. That is a ribis transaction. That is an interest transaction, and therefore prohibited. The Gemara says, "Lememra debreshusa demakavu kaima." That was here's what's interesting. So what you're telling me is that when you have a tson barzel transaction, tson barzel essentially remains in the domain of the owner. So in this case, we view the animal as having remained in the domain of Reuven, and therefore again, having remained in the domain of Reuven. That's it. So the Gemara says. I'm sorry, just the opposite. To say that the tzon barzel animal is in the domain of the makabel, of the recipient. Since he is fully responsible, therefore it is totally and wholly in his domain. So the Gemara says, is that true or minu? It's actually an interesting case here. Hamakabel tzon barzel min hanochrin. So we'll say, so let's say again, Reuven receives an animal from a non-Jew. Right? So the non-Jew gives him an animal, and it's a tzon barzel animal. So let's say he's leasing it, he's renting it, but it's a type of agreement where Reuven is fully responsible for the value of the animal. So if there's any depreciation or diminution, that is on Reuven. What's the halacha? So the Gemara says, Vlodos p'tremina b'chora. If that animal has offspring, that offspring, let's say there's a firstborn offspring, there's no kiddushas b'char. There's no firstborn sanctity. Now listen, now what does that show you? If there's no firstborn sanctity, what does that show you? That shows you that with tzon barzel, the animal really remains really the possession of the owner, not of the recipient. That contradicts our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Am Rabbi lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. Hadda mekabal alei onsa v'zula, hadda lo kibal alei onsa v'zula. Two different cases, Rabbi say. Everything in its own barzel setup, in its own barzel relationship, Rabbi say, it really depends on who's taking on what responsibility. Ultimately, again, if halacha l'maisa, the recipient, takes upon himself onsa, any extenuating circumstances, vizula and depreciation, then ultimately the animal is in his possession. If not, then ultimately it remains in the possession of the original owner. Omele Rava says, I don't understand. I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense. The Bible says the whole chap of tzon barzel is what? What's the whole chap of tzon barzel? The chap of tzon barzel is that the recipient is taking upon himself depreciation. If you're telling me that there's a scenario where the owner is maintaining responsibility for depreciation, then it's not tzon barzel. Then it's not tzon barzel. The old, furthermore, adatani seifa v'amakablin tzon barzel mina akum, but therefore, I'm going to say, if that's the case, then in the seifa, which is the next Mishnah, instead of talking about a case where makablin tzon barzel mina akum, our Mishnah, liflog bididei, why not go ahead and splice the case itself and say the following, when is this so, delo kibal ale onsa, where you weren't makabal onsin, vizula, aval kibal mara onsa vizula shapertami. So when is this true? Ultimately, again, that there's a prohibition of ribis, only ultimately, again, if halacha lemaisa, the owner did not accept upon himself depreciation or own sin, but if he did, it should be permitted. Ela amarava idi lo kabale mara own savazula. Now they will say you have to say the whole chap of tzon barzel is where the owner does not take upon himself ones, extenuating circumstances or depreciation, right? That has to be the case because otherwise it's not tzon barzel. So we'll say. So remember again, we have a simple question. Based on our Mishnah, it would appear that tzon barzel really is in the domain of the recipient. The problem is, from the Mishnah, it talks about if you receive a tzon barzel animal from a non-Jew, right, and that animal has offspring, that offspring doesn't have kiddushas bechar, firstborn sanctity. That sounds like tzon barzel is in the possession of who? The actual owner. So which one is it? As we're trying to reconcile over here. Ela amarava, idi v'idi dol keval emar adonsa. Listen to this. V'gavi b'choros, haynu tam devlodos p'trimina b'chora. So we'll say, in reality, tzon barzel, bosai, is considered to be in the domain of the recipient. Right? And therefore, it is the recipient who has responsibility for ones, extenuating circumstances, as well as for any diminution or depreciation. So why is it that if I receive tzon barzel from a non-Jew, why is the firstborn offspring, why doesn't it have kiddushas bechar? Why is that? The Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Kevan de'ilo yoev zuzi, asi nachri tafis le'la behema, ve'ilo mashkech la'la behema, tafis lulit lodos, habe le'yad nachri be'emsa. See, I'll tell you why. Because in this case, when I receive the animal from the nachri, I will say, let's play this out. If I don't go ahead and, let's say, pay the rental amount or the lease amount, what's going to happen? The nachri is taking what? It's taking the animal. And if I don't have money, I don't have the animal, what is the nachri going to take? The offspring. So because that, I will say, what is this? This animal has partial Gentile ownership. or Gentile involvement. And because it has Gentile involvement slash ownership, therefore, I was saying, that's called Yad Nachri Be'emsa. The hand of the non-Jew is in the animal itself. The Chol Yad Nachri Be'emsa Patem in HaBechora. The concept of Bechora, the concept of Kiddushas Bechara's firstborn sanctity, only applies to an animal that has complete Jewish ownership. If there is any level of what we'll call Gentile entanglement in it, then halacha l'maisa, there's no kedusha. It's just a function, right? Kedushas bechar only applies to an animal fully owned by a Jew. In this case, there is some level of Gentile entanglement or ownership. Therefore, there's no kedushas bechar. That's it. It's as simple as that. So the Gemara says, "V'chol yad nachri be'emsa patam min avachora." So the Gemara goes weiter. Mar bahona. So what's that? Incredible. Incredible. So again, just to point out, we're all agreeing that the whole chap of tzon barzel, what is the whole chap of tzon barzel? The whole chap ultimately is that it is the recipient who bears full responsibility for everything. That's why it's called, that's the chap of tzon barzel. I'm receiving it. I'm fully responsible for the value of the animal to the owner. The bechar case is just a totally different situation. There's no kiddushas bechar. Anytime there's any level of non-Jewish involvement or ownership in that animal. Incredible. Let's go back there. Marcos Apostle. Mar Bahono Beneshech Vitarbis, the Chonin Dalmi Katzeno. Shabbos said, this is actually a profound pasuk. The Marcos, this pasuk from Mishlei, which literally means a person who increases his money through interest, right? So a person who illegally increases his money through the charging of interest to another Jew, the Chonin Dalmi Katzeno. Ultimately, again, a Kaddish Baruch Hu will literally, again, collect that money and give it to those who need it. In other words, if I think I'm going to get richer through ill-gotten gains by charging other Jews interest, then at the end of Kaddish Baruch Hu always sets the financial record straight, and he'll go ahead and take my wealth and give it to those who need it. Amarav, so we'll say, what's an example of that? Kigon Shabar Malka. So we'll say the example of this was King Shapur, Shabar Malka. Rashi says over here, Shabar Malka, Melech Paras Haya Venotel Mama Mi Yisrael, the Chonin Bahem, Dalim Nachrim Shei Lamanas. So we'll say, isn't this? King Shapur was a Persian king. King Shapur heavily taxed the Jews. And what did he do with the Jewish taxes? He gave it to the Gentile population. Now we'll say, the Gemara is attributing that to the fact that the Jews charged each other interest. So what happens? Because they were subsisting on ill-gotten gains, therefore what? Therefore, Allah said, King Shapur came along, so to speak, as the agent of God. I mean, not knowing that he was the agent of God, right? But came along and took the money of the Jews and gave it to the Gentile population. Alright, so I'm going to say, now watch this. We're at least going to start this today, because this is really incredible. So I was like, so Rav Nachman says, the truth is, what is this referring to? That Hashem will take your interest, your ill-gotten interest, and give it to those who need it. It refers to even those who charge interest to non-Jews. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. First white line of Rashi, She Yisrael, no tam na obed gochavim, yore litimon. So Rav said that if a Jew goes ahead and charges interest to non-Jews, ultimately, again, he's going to lose his money as well. Now, what does this mean? Now, what's going on over here? We just got finished in the Mishnah saying that you're allowed to charge interest to non-Jews, right? The laws of interest, or the prohibition of interest, only applies between Jews, not from Jews to non-Jews. I would say, so, Lemaisa, what's going on over here? What is going on over here? So, I would say, so now we're going to see this incredible tension. Can you charge interest to Jews, non-Jews, or not? Rav Nachman is suggesting, in reality, you should not charge interest to non-Jews either. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? So Rav asks Kasha to Rav Nachman, L'nachri toshech. The Pasuk says you could charge interest to the non-Jew. My toshech, what does that mean? Lav toshuch. Doesn't that mean, Abose, that you are allowed to charge interest to the non-Jew? The Gemara says, no, lo sashech. No, it means you could pay interest to a non-Jew. In other words, you could borrow money from a non-Jew with interest, but you really shouldn't charge interest to a non-Jew. Shouldn't charge interest. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Lo sagi delav haki lafuki achicha, delav achicha behedjik sibbe. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Lo sagi delav haki, I don't understand. What if the Pasuk had not said this? Rashi says over, lo sagi delav haki, v'chiba kasav letzavosling alitin ribis la'akum. So the Pasuk is going to teach me that I should pay interest to a non-Jew, to which the Gemara says, lafuki achicha, delav achicha. So the Gemara says, no, it comes to exclude your brother, that you shouldn't pay interest to another Jew. The Gemara says, I don't understand. La fuki achicha. The lav achicha behedjik sidbe. La achicha lo sashich. So Pasuk already says that you shouldn't charge or pay interest to your brother, to a Jew. It's coming to Rabbi Yossi that when it comes to charging interest to a Jew, there's both a positive commandment and a prohibition. If you go ahead and you charge interest to a Jew, you're in violation of both a prohibition as well as in violation of a positive commandment. So Rabbi Yossi, we'll have to stop over here for today, but I just want to point out over here that you see this fantastic and incredible tension. On one hand, the Mishnah telling me that halacha l'maisa, you're allowed to charge interest to a non-Jew. But yet again, Rav Nachman coming along and saying, you really shouldn't charge interest to a non-Jew. Rabbi Yossi, what's Rav Nachman's logic? If the Torah says you can do it, then why would Rav Nachman say you can't do it? See, Rabbi Yossi, Rav Nachman is saying is like this. In life, it's really hard to have two sets of behaviors, right? And it's really hard to say, you know, I'm going to act one way in this area, a different way in a different area. A lot of times in life, once you develop a pattern of behavior, that's the pattern that you go ahead and you really apply in every scenario. Rav Nachman is concerned that if you become a usurer, right? If you become an interest lender with non-Jews, we are concerned about the fact that you may become an interest lender with Jews as well. Rava comes along and says, no, that's not true. There's two different standards. The Torah says the laws of interest only apply to Jews. Don't apply to non-Jews. And why does the Pasuk mention Achicha? Again, to tell you that Allah, when you lend to a Jew, you're in violation of both an Aseh as well as a Lo Saseh. Hello, Sai. Pretty good for today. Baruch Hashem, a good morning. Also, I just want to give a very special welcome to Mr. Howard Brown, who is joining us here for Shabbos this morning. However, you should just know, Mr. Brown is sitting quietly in the back. But we owe him I'm blowing his cover. I know, he'll come back. What you see happening next door, the beautiful, beautiful Mikdash Ma'at, the beautiful new home, spiritual home that we are building, Mamish, is really due to him and mobilization of his incredible company. Just to make this a reality for us, Mr. Brown, I apologize for the embarrassment, but thank you so much for everything you are doing for us. Chavra, good and chaydesh, and shkayach to everyone.